Welcome to the Arise podcast with Danielle Castillejo and Maggie Hemphill, conversations around faith, race, justice, gender, and the church.
Thanks, Maggie. Hey, Jay, it's great to have you with us. Jay Stringer is with us today. He is a therapist and an author of the book Unwanted. He is married. He has two children. And we just came out here to talk today and, you know, explore a little bit what's going on and during COVID and check in with you and also think through, like, what are the effects of pornography on the population right now? What's going on with that? And just interested to hear your thoughts.
Danielle and Maggie, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's an honor to be here.
It's good to see you. How has life changed for you since COVID has started? Like, how is your family doing?
I would say my family is doing great. We have definitely, it took us a while to find our rhythms of I need to go into the office to see clients over Zoom. My wife needs to go into the office. It took us a couple weeks to figure that out. But a lot of my schedule tends to be kind of speaking. And so I have not been on an airplane since I think March 6th, which is really lovely. And then I also do a lot of inbound intensives for people flying in. So that obviously has not been happening. So I've had to pivot just a lot with my business because I definitely see clients probably about 2 days a week, but the other 3 days a week of work have essentially dried up. So there's been a lot of pivots that I've needed to make in order to just keep the family income coming in. So,
yeah. And so you wrote the book Unwanted, and I'm just kind of curious, you know, just to like kind of dive in, like, how do you see some of those things playing out now during the coronavirus and quarantine? And I know in Italy, Pornhub made it free access?
They did, yeah. I think from a 30,000 foot view, any time of uncertainty, like the one that we're in, is going to naturally increase powerlessness and anxiety. And with that, what tends to happen is people begin to lean on unwanted behaviors. And so, yeah, you mentioned Italy. Italy started providing free premium porn content to people that were trapped in their homes. And then I actually wrote it down. So it was a great update. But they basically sent out this email to a lot of countries that were under quarantine. So they said, stay home and help flatten the curve. Since COVID-19 continues to impact us all, Pornhub has decided to extend free Pornhub premium worldwide. So it's really just madness that in the midst of one of the greatest health crises that we are facing, a huge porn producing company is offering free premium content to people who have lost their jobs, who are trapped at home. And so that's really what we're seeing worldwide is anywhere between about 10% to 25% increase in porn traffic, really depending on the day of the week. And so I think that there's a number of ways to begin to look at that and would obviously be curious to hear your all's thoughts on that as well. But whenever I'm in the realm of kind of just speaking about unwanted sexual behavior, I think what we have to understand is that unwanted sexual behaviors like the use of pornography, infidelity, buying sex, kind of hookups, one of the reasons they do appeal to us is because they offer us something of a relief from so much of what we are experiencing. We know that when you feel anxious, when you're distressed, you're going to look to another substance, behavior, or process to begin to mitigate some of those feelings of discomfort. But particularly when it comes to porn, when it comes to sex trafficking, what we really need to step into is why do so many of the behaviors that we pursue, and this is largely something that men dismiss as just something that they do when they're bored or to self-medicate, why are we using another person's body for our own sexual gain in the midst of so much of the stress and anxiety that we're experiencing? And so that's one of those conversations that I just don't see many of us stepping into is, you know, there's a lot of commentators, journalists that will mention these high porn rates, and then they'll just say, well, what do you expect? People are bored and they're distressed, which is so completely true. Unwanted sexual behavior will always give us that sense of escape, but far more what we have to step into is that sense of we are using other people's bodies to help get us through our own difficulties. And I think that's really the cultural conversation that we need to be having right now.
Yeah, that's heavy. And as I'm, you know, hearing this from you about what Italy has done, there is this sense that like Italy is doing them a favor, you know, by I should say the porn hub that is now making it available worldwide for people to access porn easier and for free. It sounds like they're putting it as a service, like, look what we're going to do for you. These are hard times for us all and us in the porn industry. We think and care about you. But in the end, like, how much more damaging lives are going to be right now in a time where when our lives are already so dramatically impacted and upturned and right and wrong are now confused for some people. Like, I would wonder what you would think about the impact of this increase. I mean, porn is always accessible, but having it now at this even easier access, like, what do you think this is going to produce?
It's such a great question. I don't know. My guess would be that there's going to be increased levels of addiction. Pornhub knows that. If you give premium content to people, they're going to see more of that content. And therefore, after this pandemic subsides, they will have customers built in. So I think part of it is also the reality of, especially I would say this is far more true of men, but when you begin to use sexual content in the midst of your own distress, if you were to think about something that Dan Siegel termed the window of tolerance, mm-hmm. which is basically just the ability to regulate yourself, to be able to feel like you're in what he calls the green zone. And it doesn't mean that you're not in distress. It just means that I'm able to actually soothe my anxiety. I'm able to understand if I'm angry. I'm able to kind of move into those emotions instead of outsource them to something else. And so I would say at a very large scale, what the porn industry and sex industry is doing is teaching us to not build our window of tolerance, but to really outsource the solution to something that I would say has a lot of male gender-based violence associated to it. And so just that sense of, I mean, whether you're 18, whether you're 26 or 45, and you begin to think about, you know, I'm stressed, and I deserve and I'm entitled to look at another human body in the midst of my own distress because I need an escape. Well, how is that going to set up kind of intimate partner violence? How is that going to set normative standards for a lot of people of, you know, I don't know how to deal with my own anger. I don't know how to deal with my distress, but I only know how to pursue an orgasm at someone else's exploitation. I think that that's really troubling.
Yeah, and I think just in the circles I've been in, just the idea that anger is coming out and it's coming out sideways. So whether you can numb it for a bit, you know, maybe with food or alcohol or, you know, porn, maybe for a time it's kind of numbed, but that doesn't mean it's not going to come out. It's still going to leak out sideways. So I think the idea that, you know, oh, I can use porn or, oh, I can use this or that to kind of like suppress some of these feelings and therefore they won't come out on my family. That's just not true. I have not experienced that to be true even in my life with, you know, eating or going for a run. Like, yes, there is some mitigation for a time period, but if I'm actually not engaging my anger and engaging the way, like engaging what I'm feeling and having some space of relief, it still comes out sideways.
Oh, so well said. Yes. So a couple things on that. I mean, I think one of the main failures of the evangelical community is that they almost always see kind of pornography or what they would just kind of say sexual sin to be a matter of lust. And so then what ends up happening is that the evangelical community creates all of this kind of lust management where Let's get into accountability. Let's get some internet monitoring on our computer. Slap a rubber band around your wrist if you continue to struggle. And we have all of these mechanisms set up, and yet people continue to struggle. Why? Well, you've only cut off one tributary of unwanted sexual behavior. So there's a lot of tributaries that flow into that river. And I think anger is one of those big ones. And so what ends up happening for a lot of people is they through their anger and understand it. To kind of go back to Dan Siegel's language, he would say, what does it mean for you to name it, to tame it? And so the moment that we are able to have some proprioception, which is basically just the ability to name our own affect and what we're experiencing, that actually soothes really amazing neurochemicals down into our limbic system, which is actually the thing getting really angry and really distressed. And so that is really what we need to be doing, is to be able to name the distress, to be able to name, I'm really anxious. My hygiene is terrible these days. Danielle, I'm so glad that you mentioned other unwanted behaviors like drinking, or maybe you're Netflix binging Tiger King. But the reality for every one of us is that when we are not taking care of ourselves and we are outsourcing the solution to something that we know doesn't bear much significance or beauty or glory at the end of the day, we are going to feel like crap. And that is what I would say is one of the primary reasons why people stay in unwanted sexual behavior for over a lifetime, is that I don't think sexual brokenness has much to do with self-medicating. I think it has far more to do with this sense of being bound to a type of judgment against yourself. So I don't like my job. I'm trapped with my kids, trapped in a job that I'm grateful to have, but also maybe you really want to do something else, but you're trapped at home. Well, what do you begin to pursue? Maybe more alcohol, maybe more porn. And then what do you begin to feel? Well, now I don't like myself. And the more that we do not like ourselves, the more that we are actually going to go and pursue behaviors that confirm those core judgments against ourselves. And so it's this terrible, terrible cycle of I don't like what I'm feeling due to COVID-19. So I'm going to pursue something else, and crap. The very thing that I just pursued now is making me feel even worse than I did at the outset of this thing. And that's really the cycle that so many of us are in over these last, I was going to say 8 weeks, but it could be 42. I have no idea. I know it's March, but.
I think that really hits me too, just like pursuing this. And I think in a time of being trapped, which, you know, a lot of us, you know, I've felt trapped even before the quarantine at times. So you have mm-hmm. that layer, and then you just don't have any adrenaline options, you know, just that kind of like kick, high kick. And when you're in quarantine, I think it's very, porn is that high kick, you know, it's that high kick. It's risky behavior. You didn't have to leave your house. You know, you're shut in, you got the isolation. So for me, it's like this, it feels like this compound effect.
Yeah. Everything. As much, everything just feels like it is full of difficulty. There's so much futility in this time of, you know, I'm trying to have so many memories over the last 8-9 weeks of trying to be at my computer, writing emails back, trying to kind of set up the next stage of work that I want to do. And then my daughter is asking me, like, basically, is the J a G sound? Is it a G? And so I'm like at my computer being like, Iona, just hold on in just a second. So I'm feeling futility as you know, a business owner. I'm feeling futility as an educator to my child. My hygiene is terrible Wednesday through Sunday. And just that stuckness. And so I think for a lot of people, that is the appeal to something like pornography, is that it gives you a world, kind of in the language of Genesis 3, it gives you a world without thorns and thistles. It gives you the ability to be able to escape some of the difficult relationship dynamics that you're in. And you can get exactly what you want when you want it. And you can order someone else to be subordinate to any sexual fantasy that you possibly desire. And who's going to want to give that up when they're stuck in quarantine feeling so much futility? And so I think that's really the path to a sense of freedom from this, is how do I begin to honor that some of my unwanted sexual behaviors, some of my unwanted just binge behaviors, whether that's food, alcohol, is actually providing me something of an escape, something of a place of comfort, yet also be able to step in with integrity to name, after I'm done pursuing whatever behavior that is, I actually feel more judgment at the end of the day than rest or beauty or anticipation of something really lovely. And to me, that's what we have to step into, is let's honor the unwanted sexual behavior for how it provided us an escape, but really step into something of the grief of what that, you know, the position of pornography within exploitation, and also that sense of, I want something better for my life, for my family, than a hidden secretive behavior that actually just fuels the judgment against myself.
Yeah, that's what was so hopeful about your book, because I totally resonated with when you were talking about evangelical communities just saying, well, this is about lust management, and we're going to set up all these structures and hoops and all the tasks that you need to do to complete this, to eradicate this from your life. But when you come to yourself at a place of curiosity rather than self-contempt, then that's really, you know, the keys to opening what is actually happening. You know, I've heard it said, and maybe you could agree or disagree, that really viewing porn is really just a symptom, and it's not actually the problem, that there's actually this deeper thing that needs to be addressed. And that was one of the things you talked about in your book. You said, listening to our lust, like it has something to teach us and something to say. Can you speak to that for people who are out there and maybe they are using porn and ashamedly, and it both brings them relief and more contempt? Like, what words could you have for them about how to engage themselves right now in a way that would be honoring?
Sure. Yeah. So I mentioned some of the lust management earlier in the episode. And I would say the other kind of realm that we also deal with is more of what I would just kind of say is the sex positive movement. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I love so much of what they're trying to do. But my one critique of them is that I often think that they kind of go into much more shame management. So if evangelical is kind of about lust management, I would say a lot of the sex positive approaches are about, if we could just reduce the shame and stigma associated with people's sexual choices, then people would actually naturally develop healthier behaviors. Well, it turns out that that's not really true. Mm. Doesn't deal with human trafficking, doesn't really deal with sexual exploitation, doesn't deal with a lot of consent issues. And so a lot of what I was trying to do in my book Unwanted was to really carve out something of a third way of what if we could actually ask people who are struggling with unwanted sexual behaviors to tell us their life story? Like, what were their relationships like with their mom and their dad? What were the formative adverse childhood experiences that they went through, like bullying, sexual abuse, the divorce of a parent? And how did those things that happened to us early on in life actually shape the trajectory of our sexual lives? But I also wanted to step into, you know, Pornhub and a lot of other porn sites will actually publish all of their data for all of us to see. And so Pornhub publishes usually the top 20 search for terms in the last year. And so there's a lot of mother-oriented themes. They're hentai porn, which is basically animation that basically makes the childification of adults and the adultification of children. So I kind of looked at what were the primary, you know, 20 top search for terms on the internet, and basically had a team from New York University handle all the analytics with it. So we had massive amounts of data on about 4,000 men and women who are struggling with this. And what we found in the data when all the research came back was that unwanted sexual behavior, even the specifics of what people put into the internet, like the actual videos that they searched out, could be shaped, if not fully predicted, based on their life story. And so to me, this has huge implications. It means that our sexual brokenness, the difficulties that we are facing in our sexual lives, are not a life sentence to shame or addiction, but it is a life altering invitation to pursue healing. So basically what I say in the book is that our sexual brokenness is a roadmap to healing. And so that's really where that phrase, listen to your lust, comes from, is what if you actually engage your sexual life with a sense of curiosity? So just give you one example of this, or maybe two examples that I talk about in the book. The first was that, let's say that you were a man who was pursuing, a college-based sexual fantasy. Maybe a woman with a smaller body type or a race that suggested to you some level of subservience. What my data found was that those men tended to have a very predictable story. They had very strict fathers. They were dealing with a high level of lack of purpose in their life. And third, they had high levels of shame. And so when you begin to stitch together some of that narrative of here's a man who is overpowered with a very rigid father, he feels really stuck in his life, and he feels lots of shame. Well, where do you think that person is going to go in order to try and find power over another human being? Well, pornography gives him that opportunity. And so one of my favorite quotes is from a Franciscan priest, Richard Rohr, says that the pain that you do not transform, you transmit. Always someone else has to suffer because I don't know how to. And so I think that's the big invitation, specifically to men, is how do we begin to suffer some of the harm, some of the trauma in our stories, so that we don't actually go and transmit so much of that harm onto women, onto particular races. So we really need to begin to step into, what am I doing with my grief? What am I doing, Danielle, back to your earlier point about anger, what am I doing, particularly as a man, to begin to address my anger instead of just transmit it? The other data point that I was going to say was just that we looked at who were the most significant users of pornography, those that answered a 5 on the Likert scale. And what we found about those individuals is that they had sexual abuse scores that were nearly 24% higher than those who did not view pornography at all. Mm. And this was true for men and women. And to me, that's so much of the tragedy, is that, sexual abuse sets a very toxic sexual template in the life of so many boys and girls. And so when that harm of sexual abuse really isn't engaged, what begins to happen is a type of reenactment where they're pursuing a type of sexual behavior that in some ways mirrors something of the abuse. They might feel some level of secrecy, some level of arousal, but then also a lot of shame in their behavior. And to me, that's the core invitation of unwanted, is how do we allow our present brokenness, our present struggles, to actually open the door to the wider themes of grief and heartache that we haven't yet attended in our lives.
Yeah, really, a couple things really strike me. The first thing I wrote down was compassion. And I think as a person that has looked at pornography in the past and has been harmed by it, when I think of guys looking at pornography, my whole life is a story of just feeling like anger and like rage and hate towards particularly men, but just in general towards porn users. And the way you describe it, I just have a new level of compassion. And the way you describe the two ways of looking at it, like there's the shame and there's a story for each person that's involved with pornography. So I think there's a real way to engage compassion there, which is the call of the church. And then another thing I thought through is, Resma Menakem writes this book on racialized trauma. And he talks about how when one unsettled body encounters another body, the bodies become unsettled, and how that's the difference between processing like a clean pain and a dirty pain. It's not like you're necessarily meaning to reenact your trauma on someone else, but when you're triggered and you don't know what to do with your anger, it comes out, like I was saying, sideways. So your unsettled body is, you know, you're looking at porn or I'm looking at porn, and then I will unsettle my husband or I will unsettle my kids. And the pathway through this is so much of what you said. It's holding on to grief. And grief is so hard because it's not a sprint. It's this marathon. And it's re-suffering. It's re-suffering. And who wants to do that? I mean, right? And so just, I just found so much hope, though, in your language for it. And hope for the church and a call for the church to run faith more as like a marathon and not as a sprint to an end. So those are kind of the things that came up for me.
I love that distinction of clean pain, dirty pain. Just so much of what happens with a lot of our unwanted behaviors are that sense of dirty pain. Like, I don't like myself. I don't like where I'm at. I'm pissed off at my partner. And when we don't move through that to kind of understand what are the stories that brought that to fruition, we're going to be in dirty pain. I've actually studied my life. I'm investigating where my unwanted behaviors come from. I'm leaning into, why do I have so much unresolved anger that seems to be triggered at this point in almost every relationship? And so clean pain is that invitation to really study the debris behind you. And that could be porn, that could be just a lot of anger in relationships. And so I think that that's the core invitation of this time of COVID-19 is, I don't think that the coronavirus is necessarily creating brand new issues for any of us to deal with. That needs to be nuanced. But I would say for the majority of us, it's revealing what the core foundations of our life and our self-care rhythms actually are. It's revealing just racism in America. It's revealing the foundations of so many unpleasant realities of our collective lives. And so I think that's the piece of integrity, is don't try and have integrity with porn. Don't try and have integrity with, like, slapping a rubber band around your wrist. Have integrity to turn and face the themes of your life that you have not yet wanted to deal with. And I think that's true from an individual level, but I also think that that's true socially, is we've got to look at the patterns and the narratives that have got us to this point where we are today.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, it's so true. I love that you bring in like the collective aspect of it, because so much too of the trauma being reenacted right now is just this collective trauma. And it's been going on, like you said, but now it's like the veil's ripped back. It's like the Band-Aid's ripped off, and you're like, oh yeah, my knee is still bloody and scraped.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have been treating this with Band-Aid for far too long.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
Jay, what are ways that our listeners could connect with you? We obviously will put a link to your book, but what about your website, or how can they reach out to you?
Sure. My website is jay-stringer.com, and that has a lot of resources, articles, those sorts of things. One of my passions as a therapist, I'm also an ordained minister, is to really begin to change the conversation on this topic for the church. And so two resources that I would plug outside of just the book would be, I have what's called the Sexual Behavior Self-Assessment. And that is basically 160 questions that is based in the research that I did, that's going to do a deep dive into who was your mom, who was your dad, what formative experiences did you go through, what's your core fantasy life like. And then it's going to give you about a 40-page report that shows you what might be contributing to your unwanted sexual choices. So I built that resource just because a lot of people are saying, where do I even begin? Do I have an addiction? Do I not have an addiction? And so there's a lot of kind of free screening tests on the internet. And I'm just like, if you're on the internet taking a free screening test, chances are something probably needs to shift. So we wanted to give people really clear compass headings of, until this theme in your life is transformed, you're going to keep pursuing porn. And then the other resource would be, I have a online course with called The Journey. And it's basically an 18-week program for churches, small groups, people who are going through this material with friends to actually take a deep dive into their story. So it addresses, you know, family systems, theology of sex, sexual abuse, a couple episodes on how do you actually listen to your lust, and then a whole section just on how do you get out of here. So those two resources, I would say, are a great next step if you're wanting to kind of step into more integrity and more healing with these matters.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us today and for this difficult conversation at a difficult season in our lives. We like to end our podcast by asking our guests three questions: what they are listening to, what they are reading, and what is inspiring you right now.
So listening, I would put listening and reading in a similar vein. So I read a lot of research, read a lot of kind of just nonfiction books. And I had a friend of mine say to me last year, he just said, like, Jay, do you ever read anything fun? Or are you just always reading stuff on sex? And I really didn't have much to tell him. So I started listening and reading just to a lot more novels. So I'm currently just finished Educated by Tara Westover, which it heard a lot of rave about that early on. And then I'm listening to The Brothers K as well by David James Duncan. Is that right? Yeah. So those two things. And I would say in terms of what's inspiring, I have actually gone into, I know we all went to the same grad school, but I took a little bit deeper, this would go back into the research realm, but I was reading some of my class notes from back, I was in grad school, but basically back in 2007, 2008. So I've been looking at some of just the core curriculum and some of the course notes when things would be recorded. And that has actually been really inspiring for me to go back to, I went to grad school when I was 22. And so if you think about the brain is not fully developed until about 26 or 27. So I feel like I'm going back into some of the material from grad school with a brain this time around. And it's been so different because I think when I first went to grad school, the only thing that I thought about was my own life. I didn't have enough client experience. And so to be able to go back, I don't know, 12 years later into just so much of those materials, those classes that I remember really shaping me have actually been inspiring in a way that I did not anticipate. So
that's so cool. I also love that you saved all your notes. So God bless you.
Yeah, well, that's the wonder of Google. is that my Gmail, that zero inbox idolatry that people have, I'm like so many tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of emails away from that. So it's just a great bank to be able to type in, you know, whatever class and whoever I could remember being the TA from back in the day.
It's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jay.
Danielle and Maggie, thank you so much.
It's good to be with you.
Likewise.